While all eyes have understandably been on the Middle East and wondering if there is or if there isn't going to be a negotiated settlement with the Iran war, there are also developments in the Russia-Ukraine war that are very, very much at stake here for us and things that need to be paid attention to. We're going to have Scott Ritter with us in a moment. We're having some challenges getting him on the line, but we're in communication and he'll be here shortly. So stand by for that. But let's take a look at what's actually happening right now. There was, I guess, the day before yesterday, we had a statement from the Russian side that said, listen, there are we're going to strike some decision makers because of some strikes that happened on in the Luhansk Oblast, where they hit a school and killed a bunch of kids. The Russians said that we're going to strike back really hard, hit decision makers. And then you see Sergei Lavrov got together with Marco Rubio and warned him, hey, we need to get people out of there. I saw just before we came on here that Dmitry Medvedev has come on and published a telegram and also a Truth Social, not a Truth Social, an X account. And he made comment of that. He said, well, we have warned people to get out, but they didn't get out. And so now I guess they have extra diplomats to give up to the West. That's one of the statements that he made. So one wonders what in the world is coming tonight and what has Russia as excited and unhappy as they are right now, which seems to be a big change. And I believe I do see that Scott Ritter is now with us. I'm very grateful to see Scott there because, man, you are the expert that we want to go to. And for those who may not know, Scott Ritter is a veteran Marine Corps intelligence officer, former United Nations weapons inspector, and now one of the most sought-after military analysts in the business. And we know why, because he always has all the answers. And so, Scott, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, let's just jump right into this part here, because this is too many people in the West say, oh, well, you know, Dmitry Medvedev is just a clown. He's just a hothead. Don't ever pay any attention to what he says. But when he says stuff that's actually in coordination and seemingly in concert with what Sergei Lavrov have said just recently and what their official government has claimed about get out of Kiev because something big is coming. What do you make of that?
Get out of Kiev because something big is coming. It's a statement of fact. It's not an assessment. Russia is complying with its obligations under international humanitarian law or the law of war. Anybody who knows the law of war understands that if you're about to carry out an attack that may have the potential to include civilians who might be in the area, that you have a duty and responsibility to provide adequate warning. It's something the United States doesn't do. Something Israel doesn't do, but it's something that Russia always does because Russia doesn't target civilian targets. There's collateral damage, there's accidents that happen, but generally speaking, Russia targets only military targets or targets that are legally allowed to be targeted under the law of war. Russia's getting ready to erase the center of Kiev. People need to understand that. Anybody who's been to Kiev, I have, and you've seen these buildings, the architecture, it's beautiful. It's about to be erased. It's about to be eliminated. This is a signal not just to Ukraine about the futility of continuing resistance. This is a signal to Europe, as in Paris, this is you. Berlin, this is you. London, this is you. If you guys want to play stupid games, this is the prize you're about to win. But in order to do this, Russia must comply with the law of war. It's, the additional protocol one of the Geneva Conventions requires adequate warning in advance. There is no specific time attached to this. So, for me to sit here and say it's going to be 24 hours, I don't know that. I don't know what Russia considers to be adequate warning. My guess is that something's going to happen tonight. And it's going to be something that nobody has seen before. I believe a Reshnik will be used, but this time used in a way that is more than just a demonstration. I think the Russians did a demonstration a couple nights ago to the Ukrainians, hit a legitimate target, but just demonstrating what could happen. Zelensky's response was to fire nearly 300 drones into Moscow. They were all shot down, but Zelensky said, we're not done. He's getting ready to launch a major drone campaign in June, backed by the British. He may attempt to strike the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, the largest forum of its type in the world, bigger than Davos, which is convening next week. Russia can't allow this to happen. So Russia is going to erase Kiev. The justification, of course, is the horrific attack carried out by Ukraine together with British and American backing of a teachers' college in Starobelsk in Lugansk. 21 students were murdered, assassinated literally by Ukrainians who had eyes on target. This wasn't an accident. This was a deliberate act. We have the Starlink antenna. We know that the FP1 drones were firing rockets that can only be fired when you have eyes on target and somebody is telling them to fire. So there was a Ukrainian with an MI6 controller watching this target, assassinating, these sleeping students who woke up, tried to escape, and were murdered in successive waves of FP1 drones firing air-to-ground rockets and then diving in with their own bombs to flatten, collapse the buildings. Russia, this is the straw that broke the camel's back. Russia has been saying all along that it doesn't want to escalate. It's not seeking escalation. It always looks for the diplomatic option out. It's the United States, it's Europe, and it's Ukraine that have foregone the diplomatic solution. So now Russia is saying, diplomacy is dead. Literally, there will be no resurrecting this. It's done. There's no negotiated outcome. Unconditional surrender is the only outcome, and Russia will continue to erase Ukrainian cities throughout the summer until Ukraine either ceases to exist or surrenders unconditionally. And if Europe wants to get involved, Russia will invite Europe to the party. This is where we're at in this war. It's a very dangerous progression of the conflict, but inevitable given the absolutely irresponsible behavior of Ukraine, Europe, and the United States.
Now, you say that they're willing to, are prepared to continue to go on further. There were some strikes in Kiev here just the last few nights, and we've actually shown some of them, pretty dramatic footage of some of these, and it was really noteworthy to me that when those missiles were coming in, there was no air defense missiles going up. That, whether they missed them or not, there were none going up, just Russian missiles coming down, which implies that even the capital city is now effectively defenseless, at least in the videos that were shown there. But what you seem to be suggesting is not just another missile attack, but something much bigger. What is your understanding of what may be in the works?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry, I'm reading your chat. I shouldn't read the chat, but Ritter's a paid Russian.
Don't read the chat, man. I never read the chat.
Ritter's a paid Russian asset. If I am, I'm waiting for the freaking check, okay? But I'm not. I pay for everything myself. It's part of the record, and I would appreciate if people would just stop that kind of nonsense. You could disagree with me. Feel free. That's, of course, legitimate. You may say that I don't know what I'm talking about. That's your right. But to call me a paid Russian asset's an insult. I was a commissioned officer in the United States Marine Corps, sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution. I've been to war to defend my country, and I would close with and destroy you, the people saying this, so don't push your luck. I'm sorry. I'm sort of in a combative mood right now because I'm very angry that it's gotten to this. This is something that just didn't need to happen. This should have been avoided back in late March, early April, when there was a peace treaty ready to be signed between Russia and Ukraine, but it was the United States and Great Britain that intervened and got the Ukrainians to back out. And it's the United States and Great Britain that has allowed this conflict to go on so that more than 2 million Ukrainians are dead, 5 million Ukrainians are wounded. The total eradication of the genetic future of Ukraine, it's dead as a society, dead as a nation. It will not survive this. No matter what happens, Ukraine is finished because demographically it can't survive given what has happened to it. This didn't need to happen. And now we're going to see cultural centers, beautiful places of Europe that are going to be destroyed in a way that they didn't have to, but now are as a necessity. The strikes that Russia did a couple nights ago were strikes that were related to the drone attack. Again, most people don't know this. They don't understand what happened there. They say, oh, Russia struck a museum. Russia struck a shopping center. Russia struck this. Every one of those places, the Ukrainians have bragged that the FP1 drone has, the production has been broken down and hidden in schools. Hidden in the basements of museums, hidden in the garages of shopping centers. This is a statement of fact. I'm not speculating. The Ukrainians brag about this. They've actually put out videos where the guys are saying, hey, we're in the school, a school gymnasium building FP1 drones, and are surprised when the Russians hit it. They say, oh, you hit a school. Well, it's not a school. It's now a defense industrial base. Everything you're showing here, all these targets, were involved in the manufacture of FP1 drones. The drones being used to strike Starobelsk Teachers College. And the Russians struck, destroying these and destroying the command centers. It's believed that the Oreshnik was fired against a command center of the drones used to direct the strike. The Russians have a very good intelligence picture of what's going on. They avoid these very kinds of targets because, again, these are targets that you know, from a visual perspective, don't look good. And so Russia's avoided. But when these places are building drones that are used to murder sleeping student teachers in their dormitory, then Russia has no choice. So they struck it. But these are not national command and control targets. These are targets related to the action on Starbills. What Russia is getting ready to do is take out the parliament, take out the presidential administration, take out the defense ministry, take out the major infrastructure of the government of Ukraine. They're going to erase the government of Ukraine, at least the infrastructure. Sure, they'll be evacuated, people will run. It's called shake the tree, people. I've done it for a living. You blow these things up and now they have to relocate. And Russia has good intelligence. As I said, if they know where your secret FP1 production facility is, they're going to know where Zelensky runs to. And eventually you're going to catch up and they're going to kill them. This is a death sentence for Ukraine. Understand that every single member of the Ukrainian government has been indicted in Russia for crimes against humanity, for murder. I want to remind people of the murder that has taken place, documented in Kursk, when the Ukrainians went in at the behest of the United States and Great Britain, invaded and occupied parts of Kursk Oblast. The Ukrainian forces literally murdered hundreds of elderly Russians who couldn't evacuate. Nobody was allowed to live. They didn't just murder them. They raped them. It's on videotape. The Russian prosecutors have it. They've played it. And the people involved up the kill chain are going to be held to account. And those people include the president of Ukraine, the head of the Ukrainian intelligence service, the minister of defense, the foreign minister, all of the people involved in government have a death sentence hanging over their head. So, ladies and gentlemen, get ready to see something very, very ugly unfold over the course of this summer, the death of a nation.
You know, that's hardly anybody in the West can believe that's possible, because there has been this belief that what we've seen from Russia over four and now about a quarter year is that all they've done, because that's all they can do, that they're given a maximalist effort and that's just it. So it's kind of a frozen conflict, et cetera. I'm going to get into some of the tactical stuff here in a minute, but what do you say to those who say, well, the Russians not going to do that, otherwise they would have already done those kinds of things. And so that's not what's going to happen here. They're going to launch a few more missiles, but it's not going to be that big a deal.
Look, you know, and I'll admit, I mean, again, in your chat, there's going to be people, Ritter, you said they're going to be done in a week. So did the director of the CIA. So did the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So did any military professional, because there was no doubt that if Russia wanted to close with and destroy the Ukrainian army and kill a nation state back in February of 2022, they would have done so. But they didn't want that. What they wanted to do is get Ukraine to the negotiating table and bring it into this conflict through diplomacy, which has always been Russia's go-to move. And Russia succeeded in that. Why do you think Ukraine went to Gomel, Belarus 6 days after the Russians intervened? Because they realized that they were dying. You know, you can say what you want, but the Russians were slaughtering the Ukrainian military. Yes, Russia was taking casualties, but the Ukrainian military was being slapped all over the battlefield and dying in great numbers. And the Ukrainians saw that this was a death sentence. So they went to the negotiating table and they negotiated an end to the war less than a month later. This was the Russian goal and objective. Look at the terms of peace. Russia was turning back all of the territory of Ukraine captured. Russia was not seeking to take the nation. People who say that are liars. They simply are lying, fabricating, because the record is quite clear. But then what happened is the United States and Great Britain intervened and told the Ukrainians, you can't accept this peace deal, and they continued the war. Now the war shifts into another phase, a phase that what Russia, frankly speaking, wasn't ready to enter into. Now you have to, this is what people don't understand. It's not a war that's being fought on the battlefield up until now. It's a war that's been fought in, you know, the back rooms of banks, in the marketplace. It's an economic war. The total sanctioning of Russia, including its energy, required Russia to undertake dramatic economic measures that are linked. You know, war is an extension of politics by other means, and politics is an extension of the economy. So what Vladimir Putin was doing was managing a very complex situation that required him to, you know, balance the needs on the battlefield with the reality of the economy and the reality of Russia's, diplomatic posture abroad. Russia couldn't go in hard at this juncture, or else they could lose the support of China, wasn't really on board early on. They could lose the support of everybody. But what Russia did is stabilize its economy, then develop effective diplomatic links abroad, building a multipolar response to American hegemony. So today, as we speak, Russia is in an extremely strong diplomatic position, an extremely strong economic position. And on the battlefield, Russia is prevailing. If you think otherwise, you don't know anything about this war. Jerome, you said you're going to talk tactics later, so I'll hold off on that. But the point is, you know, Russia's at a stage now. Up until now, Putin was balancing this. He'd avoid escalation because he has a winning formula. He's winning economically, he's winning politically, and at home and abroad, and he's winning on the battlefield militarily, engaging in a protracted a war of attrition where he's literally grinding down not just Ukraine, but the collective West. Why do you think Europe can't build an army today? Because they have no defense industry, because it's empty. Why can't America supply them? Because we've supplied everything. The Russians have ground it up. And then we went on the fast track and getting rid of our reserves by going to war with Iran. But the point is, the West has nothing, literally nothing. The situation that exists today is one where Russia can responsibly escalate without fear of generating, you know, the kind of intervention from the West that Russia would have had trouble dealing with economically and politically. It's war. War is broad spectrum. It's not just the battlefield. Russia could always handle the battlefield. But the problem is the battlefield is linked to economic decisions and political decisions. One of the things that was happening in the lead up to what's about to happen is politically, you know, Russia was being attacked by a very concerted campaign of mental warfare being waged by Great Britain using the Ukrainian proxy, where they were resonating defeatism amongst not just the liberal elite of Russia, which no longer exists, but amongst the supporters of the war, creating the perception that Russia couldn't win the war, that Russia was bogged down, that Putin was indecisive. And this defeatism was sinking in, and it was going to cause a problem. This is why another reason why Russia must act now. Because it must act now decisively to, you know, undo the impact of this mental war being waged against it.
Well, and in fact, that's a great segue here, because I want to get your view on something that's been in the Russian newspapers. The BBC often reads the Russian newspapers and puts out comments here. I have myself seen in some of the online RIA Novosti, the military review, I think it's called, and I've been seeing a lot of commentary about people openly questioning now, what is Putin doing? Here is a summary of some of the key parts that's been in Russian media today.
Several of today's Russian papers publish yesterday's statement by the Russian Foreign Ministry. Here it is in the Russian government paper, Российская газета. It announces Moscow's intention to launch what it calls consistent and systematic strikes on enterprises of the Ukrainian defense industry in Kyiv, including specific facilities for the design, production, and programming of drones and their preparation for use. It adds that the strikes will also target decision-making centers and command posts. But as Russia threatens to launch more strikes on Kyiv, there is clearly a debate going on inside Russia about where the war goes from here. As Moskovsky Komsomolets reports this morning, the Russian expert community has split over future scenarios for the SMO, the so-called Special Military Operation. It was this split which became the dominant topic at last weekend's assembly of the Council for Foreign and Defence Policy. The professional community is split between those in favour of continuing the SMO until the stated goals are achieved, and those who believe it's time to end it, because the worst-case scenario is not even defeat, it's an endless SMO.
So what do you make of these, and this is not Britain claiming things here, this is actually in the Russian media. What do you claim of this alleged split between the Russian elite?
Well, again, let me just back up for a second. Mr. Rosenberg works for the BBC. We know that you don't work for the BBC unless you've been vetted by MI5. Statement of fact, the British have acknowledged this over and over again. He is a British government agent. Not only that, MI5 is an internal security service. He is an agent of MI6. MI6 controls the British press. Rosenberg has spent the better part of the last year binging off and creating. I talked about mental war, and this is a clear example of it. The mental war that has been waged against Russia has created this very split amongst the experts that's then picked up by Russian media. And there are ways that the British can vector this into the media. Rosenberg's an expert at it. So what we're seeing here is mental warfare playing out in broad daylight. This isn't legitimate journalism going on. This is manipulated journalism through a very sophisticated MI6 operation designed to ask this very question. This very question is a British-generated question projected into Russia. So that's what's going on here. There is no real split because, first of all, that's not the way Russia works. The expert community, what is the expert community? The expert community has no decision-making ability whatsoever and has no political relevance. Ask yourself, how many votes in the state Duma does the expert committee control? What kind of political power do they project into Novosibirsk, for instance, one of the largest industrial places? Do they control the assembly of Novosibirsk? Can they influence policymaking? What is their role in decision-making? The answer is 0000000, null across the board. So we're literally talking about people who don't matter, who don't have an impact. They have an advisory capacity, but Putin understands exactly what's going on right now. Believe me, the SVR knows what mental warfare is, and the FSB knows what mental warfare is, and they understand what's transpiring here. So this is a debate generated by the British within Russian society to create the kind of doomsayers in there. But the only vote that matters is the Russian leadership vote. What you're reading in newspapers is irrelevant. That's why Rosenberg is doing this. This is a British game. It's a sophisticated game. It's one that the British have been playing for a long time. And people may say, well, Scott, what do you know? I don't know. Maybe I was involved in Operation Mass Appeal, which is an MI6 operation back in 1998 to inject misinformation into mainstream media, including the British press, through British editors and writers. Guys, been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Okay, I know what MI6 is. I know what MSX does. I was first person seat right there at the table when these decisions were made, and it's happening today. This isn't manufactured stuff, speculation, conspiracy theory. Steve Rosenberg worked for MI6, and what you just read is an MI6 operation that has no relevance in the Russian reality.
But you did say right before this that one of the reasons why Putin may be taking this action now is because there is some grumbling going on. I've heard that from a number of sources that I have also. Not that it's anything that's going to undercut Putin, but it is some people were very pro-Russian people were very angry that why has Putin not hit the gas so far, but now it looks like maybe he is.
But that's and what Rosenberg's missing, because this is an MI6 generated script, is he's talking about people who don't have a factor. There are people that have a problem. Let me just remind everybody what happened in June of 2023 when Yevgeny Prigozhin mobilized 7,000 Wagner fighters and marched on Moscow. That was done at the behest of the British. The British had told him that they had businessmen in Moscow were going to rise up and they were going to create a Moscow Maidan, where Wagner came in, seized the square. People rose up and demanded the resignation of Shoigu, Gerasimov, and would bring Putin under their control. This was a British operation. It failed, but it happened. So when people say, well, it couldn't happen today, guys, it happened 3 years ago, literally 3 years ago, almost to the month. This is the danger inside Russia. Who cares about these civilian advisors? There's a significant body of war veterans, Wagner veterans, paratrooper veterans, people who have, fought in this conflict, lost loved ones in this conflict, who are saying we need to win this damn war. And they're frustrated that they're not winning. The mental war, again, this attack on this school was a deliberate act done by the British, because if Putin didn't react to this, it would resonate deeply and you could see possibly another repeat of June 2023 happening in June 2026. Again, for the people out there saying, what are you talking about? It happened, guys. It already happened. So to pretend it couldn't happen again is absurd. And the danger of it is that you have this event that has resonated deeply with the Russian people. Putin has no choice but to take action right now, because otherwise he plays into the narrative that is being promoted by the British in the minds of the Russian people. Not these people that are quoted in newspapers. They don't matter. They're not the ones that are going to be marching on Moscow and assembling in the square. This matters with the right-wing nationalist people who want this war to be won. And they are demanding that this war be won. And I think now the Russian government understands that the old way of doing business is no longer viable, that it is time for escalation to manage not only the conflict on the ground, but the conflict at home.
Now, we had on our show last week, several guests on last week, one of which was Alistair Crook, who was very concerned about an escalation of the war, not just in Ukraine, but beyond the borders of which. He talked about his former colleague, Karaganov, and some of the things he has said. Sladkov has said some things about launching conventional military missiles into Western Europe, et cetera. And he said that actually on Glenn Deason's show. Well, Glenn Deason here just recently has talked about some of his frustrations with NATO and some of the participation that they've been doing against Russia.
We are deeply involved in attacking Russia. And I made this point last year when with this long-range strikes where the weapons are supplied by us, the war planners, they direct the goals. We have our politicians standing there saying, well, our goal should be to do deep strikes in Russia, destroy its energy infrastructure. You have the intelligence being picked by our intelligence services. They're doing the targeting. Our satellites are guiding the missiles. So we are deeply involved in every way. This is no longer even, you mentioned John Mersheimer. I referred to it as a proxy war, and he said, Glenn, really, we kind of moved beyond proxy war. NATO is now attacking Russia directly.
Now, that's obviously they're not the only ones who have that opinion. Is that part of what's also driving Putin to what may be coming later tonight?
Yes, because, again, the attack that took place on Starobelsk College was an attack carried out by the British. The Ukrainians are the proxy. But they're using drones, FP, Firepoint, is a company that's people Google it and look into it. It's run by a female grifter, has no background whatsoever. It's a front company so that the British can say the Ukrainians are producing indigenous drones. But it's not. This is all British managed, et cetera. Britain is a NATO country. But we see, for instance, the Germans saying we are preparing for war with Russia. The French, we are preparing for war with Russia. The British, we are preparing for war with Russia. We want war with Russia. It's inevitable we will be fighting war with Russia. They're talking about building weapons, long-range strike weapons to strike Russia. I mean, how long does Russia have to sit there and go, well, geez, they're saying it and they're doing it. I mean, FP5, Flamingo, is a British-built weapon that is being launched from Ukrainian territory into the Russia's strategic depth. The British are launching their weapons from Ukraine into Russia's strategic depth. This is unsustainable. NATO is at war with Russia. NATO intelligence, again, probably a good thing I'm not a Russian, despite what everybody says in your chat, because if I was, every single one of these American and British intelligence assets would be shot down because they're actively collecting intelligence that's being used to target Russia's strategic depth. They are parties to the conflict, but Putin has been deliberately avoiding escalation. But the bottom line is now that we're getting into the erasure of Ukraine, the next step is to get rid of the nations that are facilitating Ukraine's drone strikes. The first step is to get rid of the Baltic corridor. Right now, Ukraine is firing or launching drones that go through Poland, through the Baltic corridor, and strike in the vicinity of St. Petersburg. The Baltic corridor will be shut down. There's a big meeting right now of European Union and NATO members in the Baltics to talk about this very thing. They're talking about supporting them, but I also think they're talking about making sure that the Ukrainians cease and desist because they understand that a red line has been crossed. There will be a Russian strike against Latvia. I mean, Naryshkin, the head of the SVR, has published as 7 or 8 targets, which he says we have the intelligence approves. These are Ukrainian operating bases. We will not allow this to happen. If Ukraine strikes the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum next week, launched through the Baltic corridor, then you're going to see Latvia be erased. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It will be erasure of a Baltic state, a NATO member. And there's not a damn thing NATO can do about it because for all their talk about building this, building that, the reason why they're talking about building this, building that is that they have nothing. NATO has nothing today, zero capacity to do anything. Moreover, their talk is empty rhetoric because they lack the industrial foundation to build up because of sanctions, et cetera, from in use. You can't go from 0 to 60 when you have zero. 0 to 60 implies you have a machine that has a gas pedal. You get the gas. They don't have a machine. They don't have a gas pedal. They don't even have the gas. That's an important thing. They don't have the gas. The British are, all their tough talk, they're saying, well, we hate Russia. We can't empower, but we're going to ease up on the sanctions right now because we need that Russian aviation fuel to keep British Airways flying this summer. Really? You don't think Lufthansa needs the same thing? You don't think Air France needs the same thing? They're all dying right now economically because of the energy shortage brought on, and they need Russian energy. They're lucky that Russia, continues to sell them energy.
It's interesting as you were talking here. I just got an email from Anatole Levin, who just published an article in the Responsible Statecraft, and he's, I don't know, maybe he was watching our show, but he says he was talking about Rubio's conversation with Sergey Lavrov, and he writes, It most probably means that Russia intends to use Oreshnik hypersonic ballistic missiles to strike the underground headquarters in Kyiv, where U.S. and European officers have been helping Ukraine armed forces to target Russia with missiles and drones. And in his note here, he says the U.S. government needs to take this very seriously and do so urgently. They don't seem to have understood the extent of the danger. So that completely, and there's another evidence of it right there, even as we're on the air talking about what's going on here. So I think that this is something that I think that the idea in too many people's minds is, okay, I hear what you're saying, Scott. I hear what Anatole Levin's saying. I hear what Karaganov is saying, Glenn Deason. But that can't actually happen. The Russians wouldn't actually do that. And here's why. Because they've saw since this war started, every time there was an alleged red line for the Russians, whether it was first artillery and then tanks and then long-range missiles and F-16s, and every time it happened, Russia didn't expand the war. And so they come to believe there are no red lines, so we can literally do anything we want. Now we're using NATO airspace to help going in there, et cetera. Apparently, Kaliningrad is being threatened by some in the West, even right now. So it seems that we have lost our fear of what Russia may do, and it strikes me that they're apparently aware of this in Moscow.
Yeah, I would advise people to be very careful about it. I mean, you're 100% right in terms of the perception. But providing M777s to Ukraine was considered a red line. Didn't want to cross. They crossed it, and they're all dead now. Ukraine doesn't have any M777s left. Russia killed them all. HIMARS, very ineffective weapon. Russia's killed it or solved it, can't shoot it. Not ATACMS, no one talks about ATACMS anymore. No one talks about SCALP. No one talks about Storm Shadow. No one talks about F-16s, which just get shot out of the sky every time they take off. No one talks about any of these weapon systems because even though Russia had a red line, every time they were crossed, Russia had a solution to it. Russia is winning this war hands down, ladies and gentlemen. It's a very hard war, very difficult war. The drone aspect of it is unreal. People go down to Pokrovsk and take a look at what's happening in Pokrovsk. Imagine a modern battlefield. You normally think that, I know you and I fought a war where when we speak of company online, we got 170 dudes, 136 dudes spread out, platoon formation, squads moving forward. They don't fight like that. They go forward in twos and threes, six at the most, infiltrating in with drone coverage, artillery coverage. You dig in with 15 guys, but then these two guys come up, two guys against 15, but the 15 can't get out of the bunker because they get pummeled with drones. They have their own drones coming in, so the two guys have to be careful. And this is the kind of war, very slow, methodical war that Russia's winning. They're grinding them down. They're killing literally thousands of Ukrainians a day, ladies and gentlemen, not thousands of Russians. Trust me, thousands of Ukrainians a day are being slaughtered. The Pokrovsk battle cost them 60,000 to 80,000 dead. They're about ready to lose 100,000 in the Slavyansk-Kramatorsk battles. This is real stuff. This is a slaughter that's taking place. And the West has ignored this. But every red line has been managed by Russia effectively on the battlefield, which is why they're winning. But from a perception standpoint, the West got lulled into a false sense of complacency. We can continuously escalate. Ladies and gentlemen, what I told you before about mental war is an escalation that goes outside of the traditional definition of what the battlefield is. The battlefield has now been extended into the Russian domestic political sphere and is resonating. It's a different battlefield. It's a different concept, and Russia will not allow this to stand. So, yes, it's changing now, and Russia is going to do things that are unimaginable, but we won't have to imagine it in 24 to 48 hours. You'll see it. And we'll Ritter's blowing smoke up your butt, or if this is real. I think you're going to see the erasure of Kyiv. The Kyiv.
That's a big statement.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because Anatole Levin is he's actually been one who's really, I won't say passive is the right word, but he's like saying, okay, things aren't that bad, and he's been pretty calm about things. And for him to issue an alarm, a warning like this that matches yours here should be getting a lot of people's attention. Now, you mentioned Kramatorsk and Slavyansk. I want to go to that because there's a belief in the West, and I've talked to a number of folks here in Washington, D.C. who have this belief, is that Russia has, you know, moving forth in inches, you know, over the last 2 years. And yeah, they've killed a lot of people, and they've got a few big cities or medium sized cities, but they haven't moved that much farther, and they haven't moved the needle any. And in that area there, there's a recent report by the Institute for the Study of War, which I know you hold in the highest esteem. Here's what they have to say about this new, I think they call it a fortress belt on those cities.
The fortress belt in Donetsk Oblast remains the cornerstone of Ukraine's defense, making it Putin's main operational goal. Ukraine's fortress belt is a concentration of four large cities in Donetsk Oblast and their satellite settlements that run north to south along the H-20 Konstantinovka-Slovyansk Highway. This belt is 50 kilometers long, or about 31 miles. It had a pre-invasion population of over 380,000 people, and over 100,000 residents still populate the cities. Ukraine has spent the last 11 years pouring time, money, and effort and resources into reinforcing the belt, establishing significant defensive infrastructure in and around these cities. The urban buildup of the fortress belt and its satellite towns provides Ukraine with a significant advantage. Russia paid a high cost in the Battle of Bakhmut and the campaign for Pokrovsk, but those will pale in comparison to those necessary to seize the fortress belt.
So he's saying that Pokrovsk and Bakhmut were going to be pale in comparison to the Kramatorsk fortress belt. What do you say?
Well, I mean, I can't predict the future. What we do know is the Ukrainian army is capable of very tenuous defense. I wouldn't want to have to fight them. I mean, I would, but I wouldn't want to. I mean, they're pretty damn good. And, you know, their performance in Bakhmut and Pokrovsk proves this. They get beat by the Russians, who just happen to be better, but the Ukrainians are pretty good. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend that they are incapable of running, you know, a spirited defense. What I will say is that the Ukrainians are the most corrupt people in the world, and this fortress belt that he's talking about hasn't been built. He should probably check in with his Ukrainian sources. The money that was meant to go into the construction of the fortress belt actually went into the pockets of corrupt Ukrainian politicians, and this fortress belt is non-existent, doesn't exist. And we know that because of the three towns that he mentioned, the one at the bottom, Konstantinovka, the Russians are already in there, infiltrated. Up in Slavonsk, the Russians have already done infiltration moves. They're deep into Ukrainian lines. The Ukrainians don't have any reserves because they launched all their reserves to win, you know, PR headlines in Pokrovsk and in Kupiansk. I think you're going to see this fortress belt collapse rapidly. Now, when you get into the urban areas, sadly, the Ukrainians don't respect their own civilians, and so they will sacrifice 100,000 men holding apartment buildings. And the Russians then will destroy the apartment buildings and move from one apartment building to the next. And, you know, a beautiful city like Kramatorsk will end up looking like Bakhmut. But the Russians aren't going to be doing meat grinder assaults. The Russians learned a lot in Bakhmut about how to fight an urban battle. They're not going to do that again. The Russians are literally just going to stand by. They have the FAB bombs. They're going to flatten these places. The Ukrainians have nothing. And they're going to kill them, starve them, drive them out. And once this fortress belt collapses, as it will, there's nothing left till you get to the end of the Donetsk People's Republic, and Russia will have done it. And then they can penetrate deeper into Dnepropetrovsk and other oblasts to build that buffer that Russia's always claimed that they're going, that's necessitated by this war.
And here you can see this is where they are right now. This is the border there that they're trying to get to, and Kupiansk is up here. And there was a lot of time where Kupiansk had been almost completely retaken by the Ukraine side, but then they lost that because every time they launch any kind of a big offensive like that, they can't hold it, so they end up losing it and just losing the people.
Yeah, people need to understand on these maps. Again, what I tried to explain is these defensive lines aren't defensive lines. Given the nature of drone warfare, you literally can't put troops up and dig in. And so there's huge gray zones where the Russians will go in and put outposts up there and establish a fire control presence. But then they're going to pull their troops back into more fortified positions. And so what happens is the Ukrainians will then launch a counterattack that punches into this gray zone, and it looks as though they've accomplished something. They've taken Russian territory. There's no Russian troops there. They punch into a dead zone, a pre-prepared fire trap, and they all die. This is why Ukraine lost 60,000 people trying to, you know, defend Pokrovsk and counterattack in Pokrovsk, and they've lost tens of thousands in Kupiansk. Don't read the maps. If you read the maps and you use traditional military thinking about how force structure is, you don't have a clue. And unfortunately, the average person can't go to the front lines and do the research. They have to rely on others to do that for them. But the reality of the battlefield is far different. And unfortunately, Colonel, I got contractors showing up in my house, so I've got to run.
Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Boy, this is a pretty big show that we had for you here, and we really appreciate you coming on.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next time, thank I you. Hope we'll spend the whole program with you.
No worries at all. We're grateful for whatever we can get. Now, there is a couple of other things I want to point out here, because all of that aside, all the things that we've shown you so far are what has existed and what the mentality is up to this point. Now, David Petraeus was interviewed here a couple of days ago, and he was talking a lot about the U.S. and Iran war, but he also had some interesting things to say here about the Russia war. He thinks that after all this time, about a half years, everything he's seen still gives him optimism for Ukraine.
I've actually said for almost a year now that I could envision a situation in which, if there's sufficient support for the Ukrainians, and this 90 billion euros from the European Commission is very, very helpful, probably takes care of them for another year and a half, and if they can continue to increase the production of drones and pilots and units that can use them and all the rest of that, and start going deeper in Russia and inflicting such casualties on Russia that it's maybe the same as what they're recruiting on a monthly basis. You know, they've now taken almost 1.4 million killed and wounded. That's more than we sustained in all of World War II. So, and all of a sudden, last month, the Ukrainians took back more territory than the Russians actually took from them. Certainly next year at some point, I think Putin's going to look in the mirror, especially if the lifting of sanctions on their oil sales and the price of oil are reimposed. And his National Welfare Fund runs out of money because it's being diverted to the military-industrial complex. If all that happens, I think you could see a point where Russia needs a cessation of hostilities as much as does Ukraine.
You know, it's just really sad to me to see somebody with the reputation of David Petraeus that continues to be held up to such high esteem here in the United States and put on these big programs and major networks, et cetera. And almost nobody has been more catastrophically wrong than he has, going all the way back to Afghanistan. We know what happened during his term as the CIA director in this war here earlier on, just horrifically bad. And if you have our show here, you have Glenn Deason, you have Alistair Crook, you have Anatole Levin in responsible statecraft I just shown you. There are a lot of people out here sounding the warning bells on our side, on the Western side, on NATO's side. And yet in the mainstream media, you have guys like David Petraeus that are saying, don't even worry about that. Everything's going to be fine. In fact, things are starting to turn around. I mean, how many times has he said that? And people keep listening. Well, listen, if what Scott suggests is going to come to pass here does, there will be a whole new world. You can't hide behind this anymore. I mean, that was some pretty stark language that Scott has used, that he's going to erase portions of the city. A major strike, not just some missiles, but he's claiming major hits on some important buildings that is going to just shock people. And then we'll see what's going to happen after that. But I'm having this show today, and I asked Scott to come on, and we've asked Alistair Crook and some others that we're going to be doing. We're going to be continue to pay attention to this, because I'm telling you, things could radically shift here pretty soon in ways that too many people in the West are going to be shocked about, but they shouldn't be, because the signs are out there, and we're going to continue to bring them to you. We appreciate you guys very much, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive. You know we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.